Hello and welcome into this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. It is time once again, folks, for another Rex's Notebook. And Rex, you're in the Bahamas. You did not bring your sports Emmy, although look at that thing. It is beautiful.
Oh, we did not actually. I didn't even see that there. I'm so, jeez Louise, that's
we did not actually include that in our year-end episode.
I didn't even see that there. I'm so sorry. It just came in the mail. I don't know where to put it. I'll leave it right here if that's all right. I'm sorry. I don't have anywhere else to put it.
I got a good spot.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, right above there. I'll probably leave mine right here just for now, just to make sure you can see it. Oh man, that is embarrassing. It's so heavy.
It really is. When we are going through our 2025 highlights, I'm not sure how we did not sneak in another reference to the sports Emmy that you and roughly 300 others won as part of the NBC golf team.
Should have been 301. Little Russ. So sorry.
That's right. Little Russ, if you're listening, we do apologize. But Rex, you did not bring your sports Emmy, but apparently it arrived when you were gone. You were in the Bahamas for the Hero World Challenge. And folks, if you have not been to the website recently, first of all, we are back. We are back on golfchannel.com. But I would go right now, right this instant, pause this podcast.
Run, don't walk.
And pull it up. Because right now, Rex has a very interesting piece entitled, With Some Player Input and Stated Goals, What a Future PGA Tour Schedule Could Look Like. And Rex, you were pounding the pavement. You were pounding the sand in Albany, working your sources, the limited field that they had, their 20 players, but they are among the best players on the PGA Tour with very important and loud voices for what the future of the PGA Tour could look like. Sort of what was the impetus for this piece, sort of coming on the heels of what Tiger Woods referenced in his press conference at the Hero World Challenge, and certainly what Brian Rolopp, the new CEO of the PGA Tour, had signaled at the Tour Championship as well.
Well, first and foremost, I like the headline, Fred. Very good headline. Sometimes we fight with Fred over headlines. But that one's really clear. And the reason I bring this up is because apparently I have fooled the internet. Because a lot of people on social media seem to think that I was breaking the 2028 schedule. Nuclear Goff, I'm looking at you on this front. This is not the 2028 schedule. This is a whiteboard exercise. This is what you and I have talked about really for months, about the idea that if I gave you a blank piece of paper and told you that, look, we want a 2025 event tour schedule, at the biggest markets, on the best courses, with the best fields, at the best time of year, this is kind of what the Future Competitions Committee is working on right now with Tiger Woods leading the way. This is what he talked about last week in the Bahamas, about thousands and thousands of different iterations of what this schedule could possibly look like. So I tried to sit down. I talked with a lot of players. It's not surprising. Some players were locked and loaded. The second I went up to Billy Horschel, I know you're not going to be surprised by this, but he had ideas. He had some thoughts. And he started off the top.
I love Billy Ho.
I had to listen to the tape a couple times because he starts with, I give him the question, the premise, and he doesn't even acknowledge it. He goes, okay, I'm going to give you tournaments, then I'm going to give you venues. And he just started rattling things off. I was like, oh, got to move pretty fast. I was taken by the idea. Tiger Woods was pretty clear about this. 2027 is the target date for the PGA Tour. I think that was a little aggressive, so I went to 2028 instead, just trying to fit things into the schedule. It is interesting. If you start the week after the Super Bowl with whatever event we want, and we can get into the actual logistics of this, of what it could possibly look like. If you start the week after the Super Bowl and end essentially when the Tour Championship ends right now, which is the Sunday before Labor Day, that is a 25-week window if you count off weeks after big events. And you and I have talked about this before. I think most players, media partners, media types like the idea of taking the week after a major championship off. Let everything sort of air out. I don't have a problem with that at all. So if you do that, if you follow that framework, and again, this sort of starts with the major championships. Those dates are already set. The venues are already set. If you take a week off after every major in the Players' Championship, and you start working your way forward. And I think a lot of people can, there's a bunch of different ideas. I think the idea was start at Phoenix, probably not the best golf course, clearly on the West Coast or in the PGA Tour. But what they've created in Phoenix is really cool. So I think that's a good starting point. But the idea that I broke the 2028 schedule, please, social media, please, internet, I did not break any schedule. This is just an exercise.
Yeah, we're going to get into the various chunks and stretches of the season because I think it's a fun exercise to go through and clue. This is not just, you know, us sitting down and whiteboarding. This is some informed speculation about what it could and should look like. One thing I did want to go back to, Tiger Woods was pretty clear that he wants this to happen in 2027. Right now, we are 13 months away from what could potentially be, I guess 14 months away from what could potentially be the beginning of the 2027 schedule if this sort of comes to fruition. Why the skepticism? Is it just because of the legal contracts they would have to be breaking with the tournament sponsors? Or is there something else that leads you to believe that we're actually 2 years away from this happening as opposed to just one?
Well, I think you touched on it. It's just not the legal contracts. There's contracts with tournaments. There's contracts with sponsors. There's contracts with golf courses. There's contract with media partners. There are contracts across the board that you don't have a blank piece of paper now. That's how we started this discussion months and months ago when we started talking about the idea that if you could come up with something from scratch, it would be pretty cool. But as one member of the policy board told me, I think it was last year, that we don't have a blank piece of paper. And they still don't, at least until, like, look, if you were going to do this completely cleanly, you would wait until all of these contracts came due. And that would roughly be 2029, 2030. That's all the sponsors. That's the media partners. That's the golf courses. That's everyone involved. I'm not saying that Tiger Woods and the PGA Tour can't pull this off. It's just going to be difficult. So just for the idea of doing an exercise, it was easier in my mind to start in 2028 because then you almost have a fresh set of eyes to go at it.
Yeah, and keep in mind when we do go through these scheduled chunks, and if you're watching along on YouTube, you will be able to see these stretches of a tournament schedule. 2028 is a little bit wonky because that is the next Summer Olympics. If you were following the news this week, the RNA has already announced a date change for the 2028 Open at a venue that is still to be determined, but that tournament is not going to be played until early August. That's about, what, 2.5 weeks later than it typically is. But do keep that in mind when we're looking at 2028. So it's not going to be a perfect facsimile for what we're going to see moving forward. All right, Rex, let's get into this first stretch of the schedule. Again, it seems pretty clear that the PGA Tour wants to avoid the NFL playoffs altogether. That would put the beginning of the PGA Tour season roughly mid-February. The Super Bowl, the date 13th. moves a little bit. The NFL has actually been talking about extending the regular season by one full game. So again, that could push it back even later. I still think Super Bowl week can work if the PGA Tour wanted to go up against it, because as we've seen, it has still been a massive success with the tournament concluding before 6 p.m. Eastern time and the game kicking off around 6:30. So let's get into that. The beginning stretch of the schedule in 2028 could be Phoenix, Miami, Orlando, Ponte Vedra. What do you like or dislike about what this potential is?
I don't dislike anything. Again, let's start the exercise with the idea that get rid of your preconceived notions about when the schedule does stop. And look, I knew that I was going to make some people angry with this. The folks at the Sony Open clearly aren't going to be happy with this. The folks at at PGA National and the Cognizant Classic aren't going to be happy. I'm not making this decision to get rid of any event.
This isn't your schedule. This is not the tour schedule is probably going to look like.
Something along these lines. And so start with the idea that you want to be in the biggest markets. Right now, the PGA Tour is in 5 of the top 30 markets in the United States. That's not enough. They want to get closer to something around 10, 11, 12 of the top biggest markets. So Miami makes an easy choice. What they've created in Phoenix is really cool. You can even switch those around. I had some players say that maybe you start at the Miami Championship. They don't have a sponsor yet. I've been told that they will have one by the time the tournament rolls around. Doral has been a historical site. It is a major market. There's a lot of things going right for them. So I can imagine how that could get flipped and you would actually start in Miami. I'm also moving off, and it's not me, I think they're moving off the idea that we're playing the best courses at the best time of year. We're going to scroll down. We're going to get to this later. Pebble Beach, Riviera, all of those iconic venues, they're going to be on the schedule. It's just probably not best to play those events in February. You're not going to go to Pebble Beach looking for the best weather in February. So we've moved them down the schedule. There's also some logistical things here. I mean, being in Florida is sort of something you have to do in Florida in February and March. We get closer to the spring. Obviously, you move into the Masters and beyond that. But there are some logistical concerns as well when it comes to weather.
Yeah, I do like this stretch. And I actually love the idea of beginning the PGA Tour season in Phoenix, because the Phoenix Open is everything that Kapalua and the Century has not been. There are massive crowds, hundreds of thousands of people there is tons of jolts of energy throughout the entire week. I actually think TPC Scottsdale is one of the most underrated golf courses on the PGA Tour schedule. It's got a dramatic closing stretch. I love the Plantation course. I think that would be sorely missed on the PGA Tour schedule, the golf course at Kapalua. But I do think, you know, retaining this and highlighting the Phoenix Open as the kickoff event makes a lot of sense. I've been talking on the podcast for the last couple of years, like there has to be something else that the PGA Tour can do for their kickoff event, for the leadoff event, to just make it feel bigger. Well, have the biggest regular season event you can possibly have as your kickoff event. I certainly think that's one of them. I look to Rex, like all four of these tournaments are tournaments and golf courses that the top PGA Tour players are going to want to play, which I also think is important. And so if you are not a Rory McIlroy, if you are not going to be among those players who are going to be playing in the Middle East in Dubai in January on the DP World Tour, you actually might be ready, willing, and able to do four in a row to kick off your PGA Tour schedule, to sort of gauge where your game is at and sharpen up for the Masters. So I do think that that opening stretch heading into the Players' Championship, there is a lot to like about that. How about after that, Rex? So you have the week off after the Players' Championship. Then you go Austin, which was the longtime host for the WGC Match Play Tournament. Then Houston, which is traditionally served as sort of the lead-in event to the year's first major. Then, of course, the Masters.
Yeah, I think Austin is interesting. And as we go through this, you're going to see I've added some ideas. And Denver came up. Austin came up. These are markets that the tour wants to be involved in. The tour is actually returning to Austin as a part of the fall schedule next year. It's a big venue. It's important. It's a big market. And I think that that's an obvious choice because, again, if you look at this logistically, we're talking about late March, which the weather gets a little bit better. But again, you need to stay somewhere south of the Mason-Dixon line. And certainly Austin, Houston, it's always been a good run up to the Masters. And then I'm going to lean into this idea as well. Players, media partners, media types, we all want the week after a major championship or the Players' Championship off. So it creates a good flow from there.
I got destroyed on golf today, not just for 1 week. Not just for 2 weeks, for 3 weeks for my take earlier this year in which I suggested a week off following a major championship to let it breathe and to not have what is oftentimes a signature event in the PGA Tour following a major championship and getting overshadowed. Why now all of a sudden are they following my idea?
I'm not quite sure it's your idea. I think this goes to the idea that Eamon Lynch correctly pointed out that the only reason you want the week after a major championship off is because you don't like to work the week after a major championship.
I love working the week after major championship, but there's so much to talk about.
I do too, and I think I was reluctant to buy into it because I love the historical flow of leaving Augusta and going to Hilton Head. There's nothing more enjoyable in my life professionally than getting in that car and driving away from Augusta to Hilton Head. That's nothing against Augusta. It's just a very intense 9 or 10 days now. So you look forward to what is a relaxed week at a signature event. However, I can see the appeal of it. If we are doing this correctly, if we're starting with the blank piece of paper, it just makes sense. You're not going to have an event the week afterwards because, as you pointed out, the only thing we want to talk about the week after a major championship is the major championship. We don't spend a lot of time talking about the heritage. So this creates a little bit of separation. It gives players a chance to go home and unwind after an intense week. And it has the public gives the public a chance to look forward to golf again after that week.
Yeah, absolutely. I have sort of soured on the idea of doing these traditional swings like we have on the PGA Tour, where the West Coast swing, the Florida swing, the Texas swing. I do think these two tournaments, though, heading into the Masters do make sense. I'm with you. I used to cover the Match Play every year. Absolutely loved it. Electric atmosphere, sort of golf starved fans. They are going, as you mentioned, to Barton Creek in fall 2026. So that'll be part of the rotation. Again, haven't covered Houston in a while. I'm not sure if you have either, Rex. I don't remember that being particularly well attended, but I don't want to speculate there. I need to dig into the financials a little bit more. I do understand that's a big market.
It's a big market. The golf course, Memorial Park, is an important part of the tour schedule because when you want to go to these big markets, and again, we'll have this conversation later. For New York, for example, it's easy to say we need to have the PGA Tour needs to have an event in New York City. It's harder in practical application to find a venue in New York City that's actually in New York City. Even Bethpage was what? I think Rich Lerner said it's 40 miles, 30 miles, something like that from Manhattan. So Houston is an important one on a number of fronts, not the least of which it gives players a good tune-up for the Masters.
Yeah, and Memorial Park, keep in mind, is the upcoming future venue for the Chevron Championship as well, a major championship on the LPGA, which was sort of the tie-in there. I had mentioned it, I believe it was after the Tour Championship, the idea if you are going to make a different season-ending finale for the PGA Tour and you moved away from East Lake, I love East Lake. I think it's a big boy golf course. I think it's a stout test. Don't necessarily love it as a season-ending. I think this stretch that we're talking about here with this Austin-Houston stretch, I do think it makes sense potentially for an Atlanta event heading into the Masters, which again, spoiler alert, is what we're going to get into here. This is post-Masters, Rex. Again, a week off following the year's first major. What do you see here?
Well, Heritage, that's the historical week after the Masters. You're moving it 2 weeks after the Masters. I think it's one of those events. So again, you're sort of balancing the idea of historical iconic venues like Harbortown, which it is, Pebble Beach, Riv, all of these places that we go to. You see Colonial is the week after the Truist, the week before the PGA Championship. You're balancing these historical venues with trying to get into major markets. Hilton Head is not a major market. I know that. But you're still going to want Harbortown on the schedule. Atlanta is a little interesting because we're going to get to the playoffs later. And this one was delicate. I had to sort of dance around this one. Again, I don't have any interest in stepping on anyone's toes when it comes to, it's not up to me to decide what events are going to make the cut and what events aren't going to make the cut for this future schedule. What's clear is some aren't going to make the cut. And Atlanta is one of those interesting ones. You're right. East Lake is a big boy golf course. It is historically the home of the Tour Championship. It's home to the Big Finish. Maybe more importantly than anything, what they have done with the East Lake Foundation and that community, the way they've revitalized it and turned it into a mixed housing community, is absolutely amazing. What the late Tom Cousins was able to do is nothing short of generational and very, very special. However, as we get to the playoffs, you'll see later, it's probably the idea being that you want to rotate those venues and you probably want to lean towards the West Coast for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is you have these events finishing in prime time on the East Coast. All that being said, there's so many good golf courses in Atlanta. And again, you're talking about April when the weather can be dicey at other places around the United States. So it just makes sense to go from Heritage. And again, I'm with you. I'm not getting stuck in these historical swings. I have no interest in staying on the West Coast, staying in Florida. They all have planes. They can all fly first class. It's fine. But it is a clean transition going from Hilton Head to Atlanta to Charlotte, where the Truist Championship is, and then the Charles Schwab Cup, which, again, this is Colonial. It's an iconic venue. And I was interested to hear how players were reluctant to include the Nelson in this. Dallas is clearly a major market, but they've never been able to find a good golf course. So you would turn towards Colonial more so than to anything in Dallas.
Yeah, that's really what I see here, Rex. If you're following along the theme of the scheduled chunks as we're throwing them up on the screen here on YouTube, is that they are really trying to maximize and highlight the best venues that the PGA Tour has to offer. And so, as you mentioned, Hilton Head might not be, you know, bustling with activity during RBC Heritage Week. It's never going to have the same vibe as a Phoenix. However, Harbortown is a really interesting, unique, recognizable venue that the PGA Tour can lean into. I would call it easily among the top 10 venues that you players have on the PGA Tour. What you do not see in this stretch, as you mentioned, was the Nelson, which has really struggled to attract fans. The golf courses have never been something all that exciting. The Zurich Classic, the two-man team event, no longer on the schedule. I have been opposed to the TPC Louisiana. As long Stella. As it has been on the schedule. Hello, Stella. What you do see here, Rex, is maintaining bases in Atlanta, Charlotte, and Dallas-Fort Worth, which is very, very important.
Stella, big fan of the Zurich Classic. She's not happy at all about losing New Orleans off the schedule. I'm sorry, Stella.
Yes, Stella has now shut up, which is very, very helpful. So I do like that trend. I do like that theme Rex, as we go along, maintaining big bases while also maintaining the golf courses. They're sort of integral to making sure that you're playing the very best venues on the PGA Tour. After the week off for the PGA Championship is where you have the Memorial, the Canadian Open, and the U.S. Open. I think this makes a lot of sense. The weather is obviously fine in June. Jack gets that golf course at Muirfield Village as stout as any that you're going to see on the PGA Tour. Players like that as a tune-up for the U.S. Open, if not the week immediately preceding that. Wouldn't mind, though, seeing the stop here in Philly instead of Canada. I think the Canadian National Open can move to a different part of the schedule. And I think Philly, if you wanted to get back to that market, that makes a lot of sense as well.
Absolutely. And like there, as I pointed out, there's some markets that kept coming up as I was talking with players, Austin being one, Denver was the other, Philly was one. You want to get back to Chicago. You want to get back to Boston. You want to get back to New York. And Memorial and the Canadian Open could certainly flip. There's nothing written in stone here. You just look at traditionally where we have been. Jack's Place is normally that first week of June. It makes a good fit. And the idea that Rory touches on this, like national opens matter to a lot of different players. Rory isn't the first person to voice that, but certainly you don't want to lose that from the schedule leading off to the U.S. Open. I think I put those two where they were on the schedule just from a logistical point of view. I don't know that players would want to go straight from Memorial, which is a stout test, to U.S. Open, which is also a stout test. So the Canadian Open is almost a built-in buffer between those two in my mind.
Yeah, I see that. If you remember back to May, players were raving, not just about Philly Cricket Club as a venue, which I think is an outstanding golf course, but just making sure that you are in that market. And so that makes sense there. And as we shift over to the latter half of the regular season, maybe you slot the Canadian Open in at some point here post U.S. Open. As you have it here, Rex, following the week off after the U.S. Open, it's the Travelers, a Denver area event. And then I would call the John Deere Classic. It's hard to imagine in this new for-profit economy and in for-profit world, they're going to be going to Silvis, Illinois. As you mentioned correctly in the story, I think that like a Chicago area, Midwest area location makes a lot of sense here.
It does. And it's important to point out that week off after the John Deere Classics, that's actually the Olympics. And so the agreement here, that's the men's competition of the Olympics, and the agreement with the Olympic Committee and the PGA Tour, as well as the other tours, DP World Tour and all of the other tours, is you would not have an event that week, which allows all the players who are qualified for the Olympics to
attend. And they also have that mixed team event, which is going to be 2 or 3 days after the men's competition, to keep in mind as well.
Yeah, so I think that's where you factor in. 2028, as you pointed out, is going to be a little bit of a weird year. So that could change. But to your point, not only would you consider, and this came up during a lot of conversations, the John Deere Classic has been a huge part of the PGA Tour for decades now. They're a great sponsor. It's a great community. But you're right. As we get closer and closer to the for-profit model, it would be much better to have this event not in Silvis, Illinois, which is a great community, but Chicago, because it's a Midwest venue. I would say the same thing about the Travelers Championship, which is pretty much right. Cromwell, Connecticut is pretty much right in between that Boston, New York market, where you could certainly rotate that event somewhere around the Northeast and make sure that you're in the biggest markets. As I pointed out, Denver has been one of those areas it seems like the tour is going to be leaning to. Now, in the original version of this, and I'd actually gotten a lot of feedback from players about it, many players would actually like some sort of mini European run right around the Scottish Open Championship, because the Irish Open was actually in that week off date before before Fred correctly pointed out that we need to take the week of the Olympics off. And so that would change from year to year. And I think the Irish Open has some momentum. This goes back to what I just said about the Canadian Open. A lot of players think it's important that you include these national opens in whatever the next schedule is.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I struggle to sort of find a workaround for that. And I also wonder about how receptive players are going to be to that. And so when I'm looking at this schedule, again, it's on the screen here if you're following along on YouTube, pre-Open Championship. To me, this is the most meh stretch that we have put out so far.
Right now, if we're moving these venues, that changes.
Yeah. Look, and I think there's massive potential if you move the Travelers to a New York City area / Boston. I do think there's massive potential if you do have Denver. I covered Cherry the Cherry Hills BMW a couple years ago. I thought that was a big hit. John Deere Classic, if you move that to Chicago, I think this can be a great stretch. If you were looking at this, though, Rex, in its totality, and look, we've got the playoff events at Pebble Beach and Riviera, and then I guess sort of a TBD Tour Championship. What has always historically been the weakest part of the tour schedule is this June and July, sort of having the buffer around the major championships and then leading into the playoffs. What I think you could potentially do is fortify that early June stretch by putting the West Coast swing of the Pebble Beach and Riviera into this Travelers Denver area, have a couple of events international heading into the Open, and then the playoffs, sort of like they used to be, are in the New York City area, the Boston area, and maybe that is, again, where you can slide Philly in. As it is right now, it could be a little tricky having the Open Championship. Yes, you have a week off, but then going all the way to the West Coast. That's 8 hours at least of air travel on a player's bodies at the end.
Off, though.
Yeah, I see that, but it's also at the end of a very long season. So this stretch to me, I think, has the most workability, the most adaptability, I think, is most ripe for change. As it is, I still think it's a massive improvement for what we have. But yeah, this is certainly a significant change for what we have in the current schedule of 2025.
And this is where, and I point this out in the story, that the playoffs is probably the most problematic part of this whole change, because of not just, and this came up, I had never even considered Pebble Beach or Riviera as part potential playoff venues. I think it was actually Billy Horschel who suggested it, pointing out that these are iconic venues. People are going to watch these events, whether if they're playoff events or not, because traditionally you just love watching these events. They're iconic golf courses. You're also in prime time on the East Coast. You're also in big markets. All of those things factor into this. All that being said, there are built-in relationships that would be difficult to work around. We talk a lot about how you're going to get this schedule done between 2027. I'm not quite sure how you talk FedEx, which not only sponsors the first playoff event in Memphis, which is where FedEx has its corporate headquarters, but also sponsors the season-long points race, aka a lot of money going in the tour's direction from FedEx.
That contract is coming up in the next couple of years.
Absolutely. It is coming up in a couple of years. And if we go back to the original premise, let's play these big events on iconic courses, big markets during the right time of year. You and I both have said this numerous times. August is no time to be in Memphis. It is not an enjoyable time to be in Memphis. You can probably say the exact same thing about Atlanta and Eastlake. How many times have we showed up at the Tour Championship and it's just sweltering hot? No one wants to be there during that time of year. Pebble Beach in August? Yeah, man. That's where you want to be. That's when the weather is absolutely perfect. I will say it's also problematic because you're assuming that the Pebble Beaches of the world are okay having their dates switched around. That's not necessarily the case. I think Pebble Beach likes the idea of the tour taking up that week in February when you probably don't have quite the price tag on that round of golf for a resort guest, as opposed to August when everybody, Brian Harman correctly points out, everyone on the planet wants to play Pebble Beach. So it is problematic, but again, this goes back to the idea that you can create something cool if you get rid of all of these old barriers. And I don't have a venue for the Tour Championship. One thing that came up is if you would be at Pebble Beach or Riviera, you could almost rotate the Tour Championship somewhere on the West Coast, Seattle. Again, a major market. The Tour hasn't been there in a long time. That would be really cool to do that, or to take your advice, because I'm with you. I think Pebble Beach and Riviera can float around that sort of late summer schedule. Any time between late June, July, and August is going to be a good time to be there. If you want to move it back to the Northeast, I'm kind of with you. Maybe you do one in the New York area, one in the Boston area, and then you find another rotational venue for the Tour Championship. You brought up Philly. It would be such a good venue. Nothing is written in stone, but this is just the general idea of, I think, of what the Tour is trying to get to.
Yeah, you make a great point about Pebble, and will the resort actually sign off on it, basically surrendering their golf course for, I mean, at minimum 2 weeks, most likely closer to a month during their prime tour season when they can, make so much money on tourists and visitors coming to the area and wanting to play that golf course. I had heard as early as, what was this, February, from a couple of people, that a tour championship at Pebble Beach makes the most sense. Here's the tour's Super Bowl. Here's the tour's most iconic venue. put them together, and boom, you potentially have FedEx boom. Cup magic. One golf course we had not mentioned. I know the relationship with Farmers is ending, but Torrey Pines was not a part of this. That could potentially squeeze in as a playoff event as well. Again, public golf course, a little bit trickier to get in there. Riviera would be hosting, of course, the 2028 Olympics. So that might be off the table for a playoff event in 2028 as well. So sort of, Rex, as we zoom out of this schedule exercise, which has certainly been a lot of fun, but going through some of the golf courses, some of the tournaments that did not make the cut. Again, this is nothing personal. Again, this is not set in stone. Do not aggregate, Rex. Do not hit him up. This is just what folks are telling him and sort of reading the tea leaves. But some of the golf courses, some of the tournaments that would be lost in this optimized schedule model are the likes of certainly the Hawaiian Stretch, Palm Beach, Valspar, San Antonio, Zurich, Nelson, trying to think, Rocket Three. Mortgage, 3M, Wyndham. I mean, you can lose some tournaments for the rank and file. My question is, though, Rex, how receptive do you believe the tour's middle class will be to this 22 to 25 event schedule? Again, as we've talked about, you probably need to bump up the field sizes at a commensurate level, but this is a significant loss. A lot of those tournaments are the tournaments that the rank and file, the middle class, would be accruing FedEx Cup points to try and save their jobs for the following season.
Yeah, to put a bow on it, one of the tournaments that stood out to me was the Wyndham Championship, because it's mm-hmm. turned into a de facto playoff event. And what they have done sort of in that North Carolina area is really special. They've turned what used to be a small town event, and it wasn't that long ago when it was run as a small town event, into something that's really special. There absolutely still could be a place on the schedule for an event like that. And again, Mark Brazel does a really good job at that event. But when you just look at it logistically, and again, this is kind of how you started the exercise. Next year on the PGA Tour, there's 38 events, regular season and playoffs. That's not counting whatever's going to happen in the fall. If the idea is to get to something closer than 25, I'm not good at math, but you can figure out there's going to be some attrition there. Some events are going to go away. Now, the idea right now is those events probably would go away and become something else, another tour, another tier that would create another platform.
Korn Ferry Tour Plus, essentially.
Yeah, the one thing I don't know that. The one thing I was told that seems to be at least coming out of that meeting last week in the Bahamas that was run by Brian Rolapp and Tiger Woods was whatever that would be, let's call it PGA Tour B. It would not be called PGA Tour B. The idea is whatever the PGA Tour is, there is going to be a harsh delineation. It was explained to me. The Premier League is at the top of the pyramid when it comes to football in Europe, in the UK. Whatever's next is something entirely different. And you could see that being turned into a secondary tour, a place where you can make a living and you can work on your game and you can mature as a younger player or as an older player who maybe had an off year and work your way back up. No one wants to see these events go away. That's one thing. The other thing that you pointed out at the end of the story, I think it was important because part of this exercise was difficult because some players didn't want to play ball. They didn't want to think about what this might look like because they know it's going to have a negative impact. Brian Harman, who was on the player advisory committee, pointed out that this is going to cause some problems. People are going to lose in this situation, and it is going to be tough growing pains when it comes to a lot of different players. Tom Hoge is an interesting guy because right now he is in the big events, but he pointed out, I'm a guy that likes to play a lot. He goes, I like to play 30 events a year. I like the idea of if I want to play 4 weeks in a row, I can. If I want to take 4 weeks off, I can. I can do that. That's going to be lost in all of this because the idea is if the tour creates this special 20 or 25 event schedule, that it's, if not 100% participation, it's going to be very close to that. So not every player is on board. Please, I would encourage you to go read the story. Not everyone likes the idea that playing opportunities have already been dramatically slashed going into next year. We went from 125 fully exempt to 100, and that number would clearly have to be reduced if we end up at something closer to this. It's going to be a harsh reality for a lot of players, and whether or not this is the right way forward, I think it's still a debate, but Brian Rolapp and Tiger Woods certainly have a good degree of support right now as they move closer to this.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to have unanimous support for something that is so drastic in nature and so against what we have seen for the past several decades on the PGA Tour. The certain rhythm, the certain cadence, the orders, the swings, the opportunities, all of that is under the microscope. All of that could be due for a significant overhaul, potentially as soon as 2027, as you pointed out in the story, most likely, probably in 2028. That was a fun exercise. We've been talking about it all year. I'm glad we could actually do it. Let us know in the YouTube comment section what you guys think of it and what could potentially be on the horizon. Speaking of LIV, though, Rex, another interesting tidbit from our friend of the program, Josh Carpenter of Sports Business Journal, who reported, citing at least four anonymous sources, that Brooks Koepka might not play in the upcoming LIV season despite being under contract. Now, LIV CEO Scott O'Neill said only when asked about this that Brooks is, quote, signed for 2026. A lot of moving pieces here. A lot of, or I would certainly say a lack of clarity on the situation, not just what his contract entails with LIV, not just what the potential fines he would face for not playing. Still unclear is the disciplinary action that he could potentially receive from the PGA Tour if and when he chose to come back. What's your read on this?
That was actually part of the rumor mill last week in the Bahamas. There was a lot of talk about that. And let's just go back 2.5 seasons. I think Brooks was the first player that sort of cracked the door open, at least behind closed doors, that maybe he would want to come back to the PGA Tour. It really is. He's probably the one that got everyone thinking about, okay, what would the pathway look like? We spent a lot of time talking about how these players have turned their back on the PGA Tour and good riddance, and they can go about their business, and we'll just continue on this these separate tracks together. I do think there is a precedent set that Hudson Swafford has been told by the PGA Tour what his penance would be if he ever wants to come back to the PGA Tour. And it is built in because it's from the date of your last start on LIV Golf, an unauthorized event, according to the language of the PGA Tour. And it's roughly 2 years, I mean, based on whatever kind of negotiations you have. Brooks would be a little bit different because, as I've had conversations with people at the PGA Tour, certain players are going to be dealt with differently when it comes to this. If you resigned your tour membership before you joined LIV Golf, which some did, Dustin Johnson did, for example, if you did not participate in the lawsuit, if you go back to that first year, there was a lawsuit that was very bitter and very ugly. And if you pretty much kept your mouth shut and didn't turn this into an us against them situation, that whatever penalty there would be, it would be dramatically less than players who maybe did do those things. So you don't know which category Brooks would fall in right now, but he also has, let's say he does not fulfill that contract in 2026. And you're right. I mean, there clearly would have to be some sort of negotiation between he and LIV Golf and the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. He could, though, immediately start playing the European Tour. And if we remember, that's how he started his career, playing on the Challenge Tour, earned a status on the European Tour, and eventually made his way over to the PGA Tour. I think he would be completely comfortable doing that. That, to me, is the more fascinating pathway back, because that makes more sense to me than Brooks Koepka just sitting out for a year or a year and a half waiting for his turn again.
Yeah, I mean, he would have to stay competitively sharp. And if you're thinking, well, could Brooks Koepka at this stage of his career really go play a DP World Tour schedule around the major championships to make sure that he's fresh for that?
Yeah.
I think he could, because you look at the LIV schedule, they don't have a single domestic event prior to the Masters. And so he is already playing an international schedule. Maybe he adds a couple more stops in there to make sure that he's sharper for the major championships than he would have been otherwise, or that at least he has been over the past couple of years. But I don't think that is necessarily inconceivable. When I first saw the report from, again, our friend Josh Carpenter of Sports Business Journal, my initial impression, Rex, was that this is just a negotiating tactic, that Brooks Koepka is signed through the end of 2026. It's probably not going well. He probably wants more guaranteed money, and LIV, unlike they did at that initial wave in 2022, is not going to be offering hundreds of millions of dollars to these guys. That seems to be their MO, at least if you read the comments from new CEO Scott O'Neill. That was my initial impression. And then I started to think about it more from the PGA Tour perspective and what this could potentially mean. And if Brooks Koepka does land back on the PGA Tour, whether it's in 2026, 2027 and beyond. Don't you think, Rex, that the impact would actually be more symbolic in nature than actually being, you know, practically and competitively relevant? I mean, here's a player in Brooks Koepka who hasn't really been much of a factor since the 2023 PGA win. He's getting older, started a family, lives in South Florida, but it would signal to golf fans, hey, here's a guy who outside of Phil Mickelson was the most successful major champion that LIV Golf signed. He gave it a few years and then put up his hands and said, hey, this isn't for me and I want to come home. To me, that would be a symbolic move. And I wonder how strongly Brian Rolapp would look at that and either, I don't know, waive disciplinary action to welcome him quicker, or do you let it just play out the string and say, we don't need you, we don't want you, you made your bed?
I don't think he can waive disciplinary action. And I've addressed this before because you've been really quick to point out that, well, yeah, of course, if Bryson wants to go back, you're just going to waive it all. I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to try to play one on this podcast. But again, they have already kind of set the standard. And they put it in writing to Hudson Swafford that, look, this is the penance that you have to serve if you want to come back. I'm not quite sure legally how that would work out if you start waiving it for other players. That, to me, isn't going to hold up, at least in a court of law. That makes no sense to me. However, I think what it would do, in symbolic is probably the right way of saying that, but I would actually point to it in a different direction. If Brooks was given a pathway back, and again, I think he would be perfectly fine playing a full season on the European Tour. He's done it before in his career, and he would probably enjoy it based on what he's been doing the last couple of years. I think what that would signal to the other players on LIV is more telling, because it would show them that, nope, you're not consigned to this lot in life just because you took the big pot of money, that you can come back, and this is the way you could do it. That, to me, would be the bigger message that would be sent, because, also, let's keep in mind, Bryson DeChambeau's contract is coming up as well. And you're right. Brooks may be doing this as a negotiating ploy. I don't think anybody is really concerned about that right now, because my guess is Scott O'Neill is busy enough trying to figure out how he's going to re-sign Bryson. Because if LIV Golf doesn't re-sign that one, then yes, yeah, you're pulling the plug. The party's over.
Yeah, Brooks and Bryson, to me, are two different animals on LIV, where Bryson has really dove headfirst into the team aspect with the franchising, really marketing not just himself but also his team. Brooks has sort of been hesitant, although he is, you know, invested in Smash GC. He's the only one of the captains who does not wear any of the team gear. He's still sporting the Nike stuff, as he has done since he first started with LIV in 2022. It is an interesting discussion with waiving the disciplinary action, because I'm with you. That just opens a whole Pandora's box of potential legal issues. That's what's happening. Remember on the DP World Tour right now with John Rahm and Terrell Hatton, their arbitration hearing set for, I think, sometime I saw in the spring, potentially. All of a sudden those guys get to play DP World Tour events, but the Lee Westwoods, the Ian Poulters didn't. Ugh, what a complete legal mess. The counter to that, though, Rex, would be that this would be a really easy win for Brian Rolapp. Come on in, Brooks. Come on. Let's try and ding our competitor for the top players in the world just a little bit on the global stage. Again, I'm not sure the PGA Tour players are necessarily invested in killing off their competitor. They're profiting like never before on the PGA Tour. It's not like they're like, yeah, we got to kill LIV. You know, that was sort of the narrative in 2022. I'm not sure that necessarily persists in 2025. It seems like players on both sides are doing quite well financially and may not be incentivized to do so. But it's certainly an interesting storyline to watch as we head into 2026. The first LIV event, Rex, early February in Saudi Arabia. The status of Brooks Koepka will be something to monitor in the first month of 2026. Before we get out of here, you were at the Hero World Challenge. Listener Mark, longtime listener of the program, was at the Australian Open at Royal Melbourne. And he hit me up on Instagram and he said, look, Lav, how do we elevate the Australian Open? It was absolutely gangbusters in terms of a success. He had Rory in the field for the first time in more than a decade. He said it felt like a major championship. So what do you do? Can you just elevate the Australian Open to a major championship? How do you recruit better players? There has to be some avenue to better incorporating this into the greater golf ecosystem, because I watched both events. I watched the Hero and I watched the Australian Open, and you cannot tell me, even though the Hero had a better field, that that was a better tournament, not just from an onsite experience, but from a viewer experience as well. The Australian Open would have beat it 10-8.
No, I watched the Australian Open because I absolutely love that golf course. It's just an amazing place to play golf. I've covered a couple of events there, President's Cup, Australian Opens. I will say, Rory nailed it when he said, no, it's not even the best course in Melbourne. That's Kingston Heath, which is only Rory can get away with that.
That's going to be hosting the President's Cup, by the way, in 2028.
An amazing venue. I mean, all of the Sandbelt courses are absolutely amazing. So I'm not surprised that it turned out all that well. I'm not quite sure what your friend from Australia, and thank you very much for reaching out, is looking for, though, because if you want to talk about its impact here in the United States, you're always going to run up against the idea that I think they finished 4 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time. Like, it's just not in the right time zone. Like, and that's just the way it is. You run into this in every sporting event. I remember last time the Olympics was in Tokyo, you ran up against it as well. Things are going on in the middle of the night and they're not going to draw the eyeballs. And as we've learned in TV, you can't hold these things. You just have to run them live and hope that people pay attention to them whenever you put them on there. I will say, and this goes back to what we spent 35 minutes talking about, that if the PGA Tour does do this scarcity schedule, that if we do go to 20 or 25 events, now look at the real estate that's on both sides of the shoulder programming when it comes to the PGA Tour schedule. You have all the way from Labor Day until the Super Bowl the next year to come up with an international schedule that would attract the best players. Now we even get into a more enjoyable conversation where the DP World Tour can probably step in and create something that's really cool. And you're right, the Australian Open could fit in, and I think Rory brought this up, that maybe you find a better spot for it on the schedule throughout the calendar year. It is a weather thing. I do want to point out, I've been to Melbourne a few times. The weather there can get crazy. And I don't know how big the window is to actually hold this event. Keep in mind, it's the middle of the summer down in Australia right now. So it's probably a much smaller window than we think. But sure, we can come up with a better place to put it if you have that shoulder now because of a condensed PGA Tour schedule.
Yeah, I guess my question would be, how do you incentivize the best, let's call them PGA Tour players, to show up there, right? Like, Rory's not going to the Australian Open out of the goodness of his heart.
No.
He received, by all accounts, a hefty appearance fee. And so outside of allocating, let's call it $20 million to get a Scotty and a Spieth and a JT and a Ludwig and a Tommy to get those players at a sleepy time of year to go play in this tournament, what can be done? I'm not really sure. To me, that's the easiest out, is you have to somehow financially attract and incentivize these guys. But I do think that there is an opportunity, as you mentioned, in this shoulder season to really elevate some of these events. And not to get all sappy on you, Rex, but what I've come to appreciate the older that I get is a tournament's atmosphere. And that is what creates the vibes. That's what creates the energy. That's what creates the excitement when I am on site. And at least when you have that sort of feeling on site, it gives off the impression of importance. I think about the old Doral event and when Tiger used to play that I would cover. Loved it. I think about the old Honda when Rory and Tiger were in the field. Like, that automatically elevated that tournament. The old Boston area event. Remember that one at TPC Boston when it was a playoff event? Like, that was a great energy and atmosphere as well. This Australian Open at Royal Melbourne was epic. There were massive crowds. It was great energy. It was a good, if not great, field. It was perfect conditions for viewing with sort of the firm and the fieriness. Those are the tournaments that I want to watch in this shoulder season, as you put it, as opposed to the Hero World Challenge, which has very few fans on site. It's sort of a nothing golf course. The field has varying levels of interest during the holiday season. I certainly understand why the PGA Tour is focusing on this core domestic product from February to September, but events like the Australian Open and Abu Dhabi and some of the marquee events in the DP World Tour, which are now the Rolex Series events with the BMW PGA, the Spanish Open, the Irish Open,
Dunhill.
The Dunhill. those have to be a focal point once they get this domestic product right, right? On the PGA Tour, once they have that core product right from February to September, it has to be a focal point to elevate these tournaments, because I do think if you are a hardcore golf viewer, this is as good as it gets potentially in the shoulder season.
No, and it's a fantastic event. Can you find a better spot for it on the schedule? Yeah, probably. And especially if you end up moving in the direction that the PGA Tour is moving. I'm not quite sure it's ever, as a matter of fact, I'll go out on a limb and say it's never going to be perfect for an American audience just because of the time change. No. But that doesn't take anything away from the event.
Yeah, you have the same issues with some of the marquee events on the DP World Tour, which are finishing anywhere from 10 a.m. to noon. You're not getting huge viewership numbers from those, but that does not necessarily mean that you should avoid doing them or avoid showcasing and highlighting them. Shout out Mark. Shout out all of our great listeners and viewers. The feedback is what keeps us going. Somehow, Rex, we managed to go even longer than our made for TV edition, which ran on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday on Golf Channel. Appreciate you guys tuning in for that one. Those I've hit the pause button until the second week of January, where we'll fire up our season preview edition of Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. But you and I, though, Rex, will continue to crank out a couple of other episodes through the end of the year, potentially a couple interviews on the docket, some Tiger turning 50 content, as well as tackling any other news and notes, certainly ahead of the Optum Golf Channel games, which again are airing next week from Trump Jupiter in South Florida, live on Golf Channel and starring Rory and Scotty. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lab. You guys know the drill, www.golfchannel.com. I'm going to drop a link to Rex's story in the YouTube comment section if you want to check it out. Right now, it is on the centerpiece of the homepage. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. Have a great rest of your week.